Hello, and welcome to the Mentor Dino podcast. I'm your host, Caitlin Rossier. I am an architect and founder of Mentor Dino. Join me each week as I speak with amazing professionals in and around the architecture, engineering, and construction industry, as we are all part of a larger interconnected community. We discuss everything from career stories, lessons learned, and advice for others finding their own unique career path. Thank you to all of our current subscribers, and if you're new, welcome to the conversation. And if you like this episode, please do me a favor by hitting subscribe, like, or share it with a friend. It really helps others be able to discover this resource and support them on their own unique career journey. On today's episode of the Mentor Dino podcast, I would like to welcome Jacob Edmond, CEO of Duckworks and the host of Verify and Field podcast. And so thank you, Jacob, for taking the time to speak with me today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me on, and I appreciate having you on. You've already been on my podcast, and so I would love for anybody here to go and hear you talk about yourself on my podcast.
Yeah, so even in the show notes for anything else I link, I'm going to be linking our conversation on Jacob's podcast. If you guys haven't checked it out, it is fantastic talking about casework, but we will get there in my other questions. But I always like starting out my episodes with asking you to introduce yourself so that my listeners can hear a little bit about your experience and journey so far in your education and career.
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Jacob Edmond. I'm currently CEO and founder of Duckworks, and we are a company that specializes in offering drafting services to the millwork industry, largely in North America. That is most of my career background. I spent about 12 years working as a drafter, an engineer, and managing engineering departments for millwork manufacturing. Before that, though, I was trained. I went to school for architecture, actually. Did my undergraduate in architecture, worked as an intern architect for a little while, and kind of found myself into millwork after that.
Yeah. So as an architect, I want to dive into what school did for you. So studying architecture, there's so many people that have one view of it whenever they start going to pursue being an architect. So what was that college experience like for you? And, you know, the decision to not go down that path, because so many students get that feeling and they either just don't know what to do or they feel like they failed. So how was that experience?
Absolutely. So, you know, in growing up and in high school, I was one of those students that I was great at math. I was artistic. I liked to draw. I liked to build stuff. And so I kind of like naturally got coached towards architecture, and I was really interested in it. And I didn't find out till after I went to architecture school really what I was interested in. I really liked seeing the fruits of my, you know, the engineering, the thought, the design coming to actually being built. And what interested me about architecture, I worked a little bit in construction, and I really was more interested in residential stick built architecture. I loved the idea of, and I loved being on job sites of seeing a house go up. And unfortunately, that's so much of architecture isn't that these days. And the other side of it was going through architecture school, at least undergraduate, you know, it's a lot more theory, a lot more. What I always say is it taught me the design process. And I think a lot of people think you're going to come out of undergrad at least and be an architect. And that is not my experience at all. Especially I went to a four-year program and would have had to do a two-year professional degree. And initially that was my intention. But by the time I got to my senior design studios, I was really kind of jaded to architecture school. I felt like, you know, the students who excelled and you know, were kind of like the stars were the ones who really didn't understand what they were designing and how it would actually be constructed. And it was a lot more, at least when I was there, I was like, I wanted to learn Revit. I wanted to learn CAD. I wanted to learn the technical stuff. And that was not even available. You know, they were kind of gave us a semester freshman year of like, here's the basics of Form Z and SketchUp and CAD and go figure it out on your own. And most of the students who did really well were great at presentation and Photoshop and kind of that type of stuff. And I always struggled with the presentation. I always loved to be in the kind of the meat of the project. My senior, my final design studio professor. We got this new professor, Dan Harding, who's still at Clemson. And he, that was the first design build studio I had, where we actually, our first project was a sculpture, a kinetic sculpture. And that was my first taste of like, oh, this is what I'm missing, was being able to get hands on, being able to fabricate. And I just realized for me personally, I really like needed that rapid progression from we design something, we go through the process of like, what is the prompt? What is the design problem? We come up with something and iterating and building. And during this time, I actually was interning for an architect in Greenville, a woman who was a solo architect studio. And I was just an intern helping her with drawings. And I kind of just kind of got frustrated with how many projects we would do and how little of them I got the opportunity to see in person. And so when I graduated, I decided, hey, let's take a break. I got married. I went and got a job. And that's where I really got into my first job drafting for a door company that was building and fabricating doors. And I really just kind of took off from there and realized like this specific field, I get the chance to draw something today. It's in the shop tomorrow and it's in the field the next day. And that really like just quick, it's fabricated. I get to be a part of the seeing the fruits of my labor. Satisfied me in a way that I wasn't able to get as quickly as I like to in architecture.
Yeah, because even architecture school, looking back, it seemed like a really long project, but then getting in practice and projects are multiple years of the same thing. It's, you don't see it as fast as when you're on some of the smaller projects. And doing even residential, I have to advocate to my owners, like, let me on a job site. Like, I can help you. And I've done this, but the job sites is where the fun spot is. Like, you get to see things get built around you. You learn so much faster because nothing's perfect. You're going to run into something. You're going to learn something from a trades partner. So, but I know a lot of people tend to, when they pivot, many people I've seen go the construction management route. Mm-hmm. So how did you get your foot in the door on a fabricator side? Were they itching to bring you in to help teach you? Or, you know, when you have education one direction and you pivot, I find a lot of young professionals get worried on how do they show their value when they're doing a pivot.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was unique for me. We moved, I got married and we moved. And honestly, I didn't have a job. We went away, got married. My wife had a job. So we moved where she had a job. And I just like, I know I'll find something. And I remember getting back from my honeymoon the day my flight flew in, I got a call back from this company that I had sent my application to. And it was, they needed a CAD designer for doors. And at that time in my life, I still thought there was a, you know, hey, I'll go a couple of years, I'll go back to grad school and I'll probably still pursue architecture. But I really had no clue. And so I was like, this is related. I have related skills. At that point, I had 2 years working as an architect. I felt like I was really sharp with my CAD skills and my design drafting. And so I applied for this drafting job. And that's really what it was they were an upstart door company and they need somebody to do proper shop drawings. And when I wasn't that, then I was kind of helping on the shop floor. And that was a good mix that was interesting to me. I had woodworking skills. I had worked construction. And what evolved into was I got really efficient, put systems in place for drawing the doors to where I had a lot of extra time to help in the shop floor. And I worked my way up and they really wanted me to be a production manager as I was the one doing all their elliptical and radius custom units, and which I enjoyed, I was good at, but I also knew like, this isn't what I want for my career long term. One, I want to keep all my fingers and in woodworking, if you've worked in it for any amount of time, you know, you'll see people lose their fingers, lose tips of fingers. And it's a very dangerous industry if you spend your whole career, you know, on the shop floor.
Yeah. The odds are against you at that point.
Yes. I'm in the Southeast. It's hot in the summers. We're in a dusty wood shop and I was just sweating my butt off out all summer long. There's no air conditioning in the shop. And in the winters, you're freezing your butt off. And I just, you know, like knew I wanted to do something more than this. So I pivoted again a little bit and I knew, hey, I enjoy the CAD side. I knew there was more. We were a very low tech shop there to where I was drawing in CAD. We didn't have a CNC. And We were laying things out. The good thing is I learned how to do things the hard way, the old school manual way. But I knew, I was like, hey, I could be sending these templates to a CNC to get cut. Like, you're laying things out that I already have drawn in CAD. I can plot this full size. And I started, like, I knew there had to be better ways. I started researching, learning more about the millwork manufacturing, and realized, oh, there's a lot of automation. There's a lot of technology that is available and other shops are using. And I found a cabinet shop that was nearby that was looking for an engineer. And I applied to that and was like, hey, I could see they're using this 3D parametric software called Microvellum. That sounds similar to Revit, which I had experience with. And I said, let me give this a shot, because it intrigued me what I had 2 years of experience at that point in time of, I know there's more that's possible on the technology side here. And so I made another jump and realized I don't want to go the production route. I really want to continue towards design and applying what skills I felt like I had to offer. And that was where I got introduced to the software Microvellum, which is really what kind of took off the next decade of my career of learning how to utilize software, engineer specifically casework and millwork, and then start to manage teams that do that and kind of build those processes for other companies.
Yeah. So, and you talk about different routes. So if you go down the fabrication direction, what are those routes? Because it almost sounds like on the construction side, like the project manager role versus a superintendent role.
Yes. So yeah, kind of likening it to construction management is you have superintendents who spend largely their time on the job site managing the actual work being done on a job site, right? And in manufacturing, it's very similar. You might have a production manager that you're going to spend your time on the job, on the shop floor, managing all the different cells of departments that are doing the manufacturing, versus the engineering and design side, you're learning the software, you're managing the team that is taking your client's design and really kind of the architecture of what we do. Mm-hmm. I had been exposed to, you asked about construction science, and a lot of people go into that, or construction management. We did have that program at Clemson, and a lot of people dual majored in architecture and construction science or construction management. And I took a couple of those classes and very quickly realized, like, that's not what for me. Like, what I loved about architecture when I went into it and what I felt like was good at was, you know, learning the design process. And really what it taught me was being able to help a client who comes to you with a design problem. And usually the way they present their problem to you is in the form of what they think is their solution. So they may come to you and say, hey, I really want to design a house that looks like this. And your job as the architect is to really get to the root of what is it that they really want, as opposed to what are they presenting to you as their supposed solutions. And when you can do that, that is just like, that is what excites me. And that, I think, is when architecture is at its best. So many clients come to us as architects and they say, hey, the building department told me I can't do this renovation without an architect. I don't really want you, but I need you because I'm required to. Or, hey, I need you to tell me, you know, how do I make this qualify, you know, in code compliant for egress and fire and that stuff. Or it's, I need you to draw this for me. How many of us have gotten calls of like, hey, how much for a set of drawings? How much for, you know, a floor plan? And they don't understand that what we're providing is a service, not prints. And so our job, and really what I did learn and what I loved about it was that, like, getting to the core, and that applies to so much in the world, not just architecture, being able to get to what is the core problem. I mean, I use it with my wife on a daily, weekly basis of like, hey, I want to do this project. I really want to turn this room into this. What are you really trying to solve? And getting to the core of that, because a lot of times we can help them with a solution that's better than they know is available or exists. And so the way we become great at that as architects is we know a little bit about a lot, and we know enough about all the different trades, about what goes into building a building, what goes into what each of the trades do, to then be able to leverage that experience and say, hey, I know this thing's possible. Maybe this would be a better way to solve your problem. But personally, I know I needed to go deeper than that. And that's where I really kind of ran with millwork and realizing, like, okay, I get a chance to be very, very deeply knowledgeable in a specific niche. and using that knowledge to be able to help. Now, a lot of what it was is helping architects solve their millwork problem. They have this design intent that I want this lobby that has this hidden door behind a reception desk, and I want it to look, you know, like the rendering. Okay, how can I help you get to that? And so often in the trades, it's the opposite. It's the trades, you know, butting heads with the architect of like, well, that's not possible. You should just do it this way. And where music happens is when we're able to come in a line and say, hey, look, I understand what you're trying to get to, and I can help you get there in a better way than you know is possible.
Yeah, because that's where I almost put you in the engineer category, because I always explain, you know, architects know a little about a lot and engineers know a lot about a little. And some people, their minds, whenever they're trying to figure out their careers and where they go, some fit in a certain, I hate saying bucket, but direction on what makes sense for them. Like, I like being comfortable as long as I have my resources that I can pick up the phone and call somebody and go talk through a framing detail, or, hey, I know this is going to be an issue, or am I thinking too much about this? I rather have all those resources because I know I can't be an expert in everything because I touch too much. But definitely the advocating for what we do and expressing that we're more than just drawings. Like, you guys with Duckworks aren't just draftspeople that are getting stuff out the door. You're helping guide clients just like architects guide clients. Your clients just tend to be me and figuring out what we need to do. And I feel like we don't bring those partnerships in earlier. Everybody wants to just bring the GC in early to help with cost estimating, but that cost estimating can also be engineered and designed properly when you bring in those trades partners. So it's, you don't have that combative battle on, well, the architect didn't even do this right, or there's 10 different ways to do this and it doesn't meet the design intent that the architect wanted at all, but they didn't communicate it properly. So what's the top mistake that architects are sending you?
Well, the most common is there's still a lot of boilerplate spec writing. And I think, you know, that's understandable. That's expected. We all have that in all of our trades where it's, hey, we just kind of keep copying and pasting the same thing rather than rewriting it over and over again. But there is some education that I think our trade, you know, could be doing a lot better, and it's not proliferated well enough, you know? So there's still a lot of specs that insist on plywood over MDF and particle board. And a lot of that is based off of old information on material science that has changed over the last 20 years. Or bad experiences. I see a lot of schools, for example, where they insist on 2x4 or no wood touching the floors under the cabinets. And that goes back to schools in the past that have gotten flooded or water damage, and they just see the abuse and stuff. And so there's a lot of hard stances from architects on this of, hey, you got to follow the spec, even though we might come and say, hey, look, there's actually a better way now, and here's why this is a better solution. So, but outside of that, I think more of it comes in just that, like, I understand a lot of what we get at the millwork stage is early design development, design intent. And a lot of millworkers and a lot of tradespeople that don't understand what an architect actually is, like, I think that in the US, at least in the construction trades, so many people see architects as what they were in the early 1900s. And that is not what architecture is anymore, right? You have architects and you have engineers and you have all these other things that are specific. And I think people in our trades think that, well, if architect doesn't know what I know, then they're no good. And they just think that an architect is supposed to be the expert on everything. And really what they're looking for is for us as the trade partner to come in and say, okay, I understand this is a draft of you're trying to communicate your design intent, and I'm supposed to turn that into reality. And that takes iteration and change and conversation of, hey, I want to make sure that I understand from this drawing, what is your intent? It goes back to what I was saying, like, you've given me a proposed solution, but I want to understand the problem you're trying to solve and what is a non-negotiable about this design and what is maybe what you've intended as you think is your best solution. And so I think that's where it comes back to just communication. And obviously I think architects, if they can learn a little bit more about how the trades work and how I think too many of us are are hesitant or don't really understand that role. What are our roles? Hey, I'm open to dialogue. I'm open to communicating to you what my design intent is early so that we can get to what's important. And I think the unfortunate part is when those conversations don't happen, you end up with a subpar result that everybody just kind of has to live with. And when you don't have the millwork partner understanding, hey, these reveals in my wall panels were intended to align with the mullions from the glass storefront provider, but nobody on either side understood that to communicate and coordinate that outside of the architect. And I think we can take a lot, make our lives less painful if we understand that up front and say, okay, all I got to do is go have a conversation with the glass guy and we can coordinate in a way that meets your design intent, but works for both of us.
Yeah. Cause there's definitely opportunities that, you know, you could fabricate adjustments in your design. So then you can field verify and you don't have to refabricate the whole thing if you know what the intent is. I also advocate architects don't argue that they know everything, like how architects used to be the master builder. But, you know, drawings were also used to be 5 pages, not fully detailed, and they would just have to make decisions on the fly in the field. That's how it was done. Right. And now it's changed, but it's bringing in that partnership. Anytime I run to an architect that finds that the trades are against him or her and just want it to be trying to stand up and not prove that they're wrong, I'm like, things are going to be wrong. You're human. Like, it's not going to be perfect. If you could create perfect sets, then probably wouldn't need you anyway. So
I think GCs have also changed, particularly on the commercial side, but I think this bleeds over into large residential, is that it's so, the trades are so segmented now that, you know, it is not what it used to be where you had a builder and then all of his crew building the whole project. And they would go from foundation, you know, and land work to framing walls. Like, every one of those things is an entirely different company at this point. And because of that, you end up with contracts for each one of them that are different. And there's a lot of like, well, that's not my job. I can't overstep. And so that segmentation of the work causes a lot of, it makes it a lot more difficult for the architect to say, well, hey, I want these things to be unified, but the GC has to say, well, is it him or is it him? And so we get into this with millworkers where the architect will detail something and you naturally say, I've got walls that are metal framing and I've got drywall on top of them. And then on top of that, I want millwork. But there's areas where it may make more sense to say, hey, don't even have the drywallers come into this area. Let the millworker handle it. We'll put our own structure in there and you're going to end up with a better product. But by that time, the GC probably has already signed a contract and given that work to a drywall guy. And so that's where these things that become competing with the ultimate, like what's best for the project versus what's in the contract and what's signed up and what people are getting paid for. A lot of those times that makes it way more difficult. It's not like the architect can just walk on the job site and tell the different trades, no, I want you to do this while they're doing it. That used to be a dynamic where you could go do construction administration and walk through the job site. That's not really the case anymore. Those trades don't work for the architect in reality.
Yeah.
And I think that makes it a lot more complex.
Cause even then the GC is usually with me anyway. And so it's, hey, I got these questions from these professionals, but then I still have to follow up with formal paperwork, go through the GC, then it gets disseminated down. So there's always those components and discussions that happen, but it's more fragmented than it used to be. And it's all to reduce finger pointing and liability and who covers what. And I also wanted to get into the story behind the company Duckworks, because I know as much as I love my little dinosaur, I always love your ducks. So why did you start your own company and what was the reason behind the name?
Yeah. So I started my company. Before this, I was at a company that my job was integrating the engineering departments across manufacturing facilities. So I worked for a company, USA Millwork, and we were acquiring millwork manufacturers across the US and integrating them into a nationwide presence. And while doing that, I started building a team of drafters in South America to supplement my staff there. It's very common in our industry that there a lot of times we outsource drafting to teams offshore or overseas. And I really wanted to integrate that as a core part of our team, as a part of our internal structure. So I did that for about 4 years, and then that company decided to sell off. And so my time there was ending, and I had this team of 20 people in Bolivia that I had trained and developed to do drafting for Millwork. And so really Duckworks started initially as, hey, this is an opportunity for me. I had spent 12 years doing millwork engineering across four or five different companies. And I really wanted to share my skills and what I'd learned and help consult with other companies. And at the same time, I wanted to keep these drafters that I trained working and see if I could offer their services to the industry. So as far as why I started Duckworks, it really kind of came as a result of like, hey, my job at this company was ending and the team I had built, their job was ending. And I started reaching out to the industry and said, hey, if I had people that are sitting and trained on microvellum and millwork drafting, could you use them? And everybody was saying yes. So I started selling their services and contracting jobs that we could do for other companies while I would go and do consulting. For the name, I had written a blog post. So through my time, I had started a personal website and would occasionally write blog posts to share my thoughts and learnings. And I'd written this one post called Be a Duck. And Duck was an acronym. Be diligent, be urgent, be consistent, and be knowledgeable. And I had, you know, written that with kind of an ethos for myself and how I would teach my teams of like the core principles of being a good engineer and what would make us successful. But I remember that one of my drafters, she found it and thought it was hilarious. Hey, Jacob has a blog post and he wrote this blog post called Be a Duck. That, you know, it became kind of this meme within my department. Well, that stuck with me as like, well, but they remembered it. Be a Duck was memorable. And when I needed to start an entity, I needed to have a company name. And I thought, hey, I could do Duck Millwork Consulting. And I had a good friend of mine who had his own successful company and was marketing. He was like, no, you need another syllable there. You need something after duck for it. It's going to look better in a logo. He said, make it Duckworks. And I put that in the paperwork and sent my registration in, and the rest was history. And it just turned out that it's very, you know, easy to make a lot mm-hmm. of great content and, you know, for marketing from ducks and my team. Every time we onboard a new team member, they get to pick from a big bucket of rubber ducks, their own personal rubber duck. I've got plethoras of ducks now around my house, and my kids have these little plastic ducks that they always leave and hide places. So it's kind of become taken on a life its own, but it really just started with that acronym of diligent, urgent, consistent, knowledgeable.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. I know people start sending me dinosaurs, like that stuffed animal yeah. over there. I forget what family member gave me that. I had another one, but the dogs claimed it as their own.
Yeah, but you're going to have them everywhere before long.
Exactly. But it makes it more fun than just like, you know, your face on things or millwork. And it's just not that millwork's like hard or astringent type of thing, but Duckworks keeps you open for the brand. So then it can also let your team grow, change, and pivot as you figure out the company.
Yeah. Branding was something that was important to me early on because I always felt like, particularly in millwork, like we're behind the times and everything was very stuffy and like everybody had a saw blade on their logo. And I just felt like I wanted to be different and wanted to stand out and be a little bit more young and lively. So Ducks made that a lot easier.
Yeah. And so how do you actively build that teaching and mentoring culture with your team since a chunk of your team is down in Bolivia?
Yeah, absolutely. So I do go down there at least 3 or 4 times a year. Early on, you know, it was a lot of me doing all the, like I taught every one of our initial, you know, 20 or 30 drafters directly. Fortunately, before this, you know, COVID hit. And so really before I started building this team down there, I had 84 drafters and engineers across the US and we had all gone remote. So I had to figure out how to be like, we're not in the same place, but we can make this work. And so a lot of that, like we spend a lot of time on Teams calls like this. Outside of that, you know, with drawings, as you know, like there's a lot of redlining and a lot of marking up and a lot of like working from red lines. And that doesn't really change. We use Bluebeam and there's a lot of correlation or correspondence and kind of coordination going through things digitally anyways. But yeah, teaching and learning. I mean, one of our core values now is always growing. And so I think as architects and engineers, we're naturally tend to be you know, forever learners. But that is something that is important to us in our recruiting and our filtering of who we hire. And then we actually, 2 years ago now, 2.5 years ago, we've always kind of had some of our lead people designated as our trainers. And we actually made one of them a full-time training coordinator and actually have grown that team to 2. So constantly investing in, not only do we train onboarding new people, but as people come on, our people go from drafter 1 to drafter 2 to drafter 3 to senior drafter to team lead. Like, it's building into the structure of our organization that growth and learning is vital for our success, but also on the individual level. And we try to, you know, make that a core part of our culture and reward it.
Yeah. And there's a key part that there's a lot of overlap with the architecture side and firm struggling. So I hear a lot of firm owners and firm leaders saying, where's all the talent at? I can't find good talent. Where can I go to find it? And I always advocate to them, it's not so much a talent gap, it's a training gap. You don't have the training systems set up to train them. And just because their schooling is different than what your schooling was 20 years ago, the fact that architecture stayed very old school, that you better be sitting next to somebody and that somebody better be a great mentor and that's how you're going to learn. And if not, you're kind of screwed. But it's a training gap that doesn't happen. It's not so much that there's not talent out there if you don't train them to do it properly. So do you have any advice for firms? Because you're creating a talent and training coordinator. Like, architecture firms don't have that position. Even in the mega firms of Gensler, Stantec, I don't see that unless it's an HR person that doesn't know the AEC industry and how to put things together.
Yes. I mean, you hit it on the head. And I hear that constantly. We have a huge workforce talent drought in millwork and the trades at large, right? And anytime I hear an owner or leader say, I can't find good talent, like, I know you don't know how to train people. And because it's very ancestral of, hey, we're just going to keep stealing senior talent from each other. And all that does is, one, you guys are driving up the market of how much it costs for senior talent. And two, those people are eventually retiring, which is what's happening for us. The majority of our engineers and drafters in this industry are nearing or already hitting retirement age faster than we're bringing people in. I think architecture, you know, probably has benefited from that. You know, it is a very romanticized trade and industry, and there's you've got university programs across the U.S. that are training talent for you in theory. But even I remember when I was in architecture school, it was like all my engineering friends would go have internships that were like coordinated by the school, and they would get paid internships, and I was having to fight and scrape by to go find somebody to let me draw for them as an intern architect, right? And then I would, you know, hopefully get through my 4 years, go do 2 more years. And then I would have to do 7 years of ARE and IDP, you know, and it was like, the onus is all on us as the individual. And we have to just want to be an architect so bad that we're willing to put in the time to hopefully make 60 grand a year and slave it out, you know? And it's like, it doesn't have to be that way. And I think architecture and my trade as well would have a much higher success rate if companies invested in developing people. And I noticed this early on, even when I started going from millwork shop to millwork shop, is I would be at a small shop and they'd say, hey, we need an engineering manager. You want to be our engineering manager? And so I would start onboarding people and realize we have no onboarding process. And I would feel guilty, you know, like on day one, I'm having to clean out their desk from the last person. I'm having to put together a plan because I wanted them to feel like they made the right choice to come work for us. And so very early on in my career, I realized we lacked that. And it just, I felt like I wanted it to be, it needed it to be successful. And I wanted these young people that I was hiring to come in to feel like, hey, I'm glad I made this decision to work here. which is not how I felt most companies I went to. And so it started, I think, then of realizing, okay, I need an onboarding plan in general for people. And then that bridged into, well, how am I going to develop them from an onboarding plan to being a successful individual contributor? And in Millwork, I very early on was recruiting from adjacent experience because there's no Millwork schools, really. There's very few. So I would hire people that maybe had a CAD tech degree or were architecture in the past, and I could translate and teach them Millwork, but I knew that I had to teach them to learn to make them capable of doing this. And so I guess just naturally, you know, I decided, why compete and try to just keep recruiting talent from other people if I can build it myself? And I knew that I could do it because I did it myself. I came from no Millwork background and learned and figured out, well, what would have made my experience coming up better, more successful, more repeatable. And that's really what I've tried to do with Duckworks is, you know, we come alongside our clients to help them solve a problem. And I think so many, it's very easy to look at that problem as like, we're just producing drawings. But really what we're doing is we're providing people, because that's what our clients are struggling with. Our clients know how to engineer without us. They just have a capacity issue. They have they don't have enough talent to get the work done. And so we don't try to come in and say like, hey, we're trying to help you and make you do better drawings than what you do on your own. It's, we can give you capacity and we can integrate with your systems in a way that makes it streamlined. And so that means developing our people to be as self-sufficient as possible. Our purpose, we say, is we grow people who grow businesses. And so I always try to come back to that as like, what are we doing that's actually true in growing our people to prepare them to be able to help our clients grow their businesses? And I think honestly, if more architects had that same mentality of, as opposed to just systems and software and technology, it's how are you investing in your people to have them grow your business and make things possible?
Yeah. And it's that delegation tool, because since going off and starting my own firm, I have found there's more resources that I didn't realize were available that I used to do all in-house. And you're, especially as a young professional, like stumbling through trying to figure out, okay, what casework details and can I grab from another project or what's in the library? Does this actually work? Who knows? But there are so many manufacturers that do that for free, that it's okay, I can delegate that to you. I can get drawings and either put it in my set or put it in as an addendum or any other supplemental materials, but then I don't have to go spend the time and the effort to go design it, but it's having those conversations. So it meets the design intent. It's already engineered properly and it's got the proper details. So then I can go spend my time on other design elements that need more work, or bringing in the trade partners to go through, hey, something crazy design we want to hit, what is the way to approach it to then work through the details early rather than spinning your wheels. But like, I've got two great kitchen manufacturers now that, hey, if I've got a kitchen for a big house, I just send it to them. Be like, here's the general layout. I don't like my cabinets anyway. It's just placeholders, but here's where appliances need to go based on workflow. Go. And then I can go work on something else. Or if I need a custom design, I know the owner of a Millwork shop across the river from me that I'm going to hop over and go to his shop. And it's like, hey, we're going to go figure this out together rather than me go try to design it over and over again, which is what I was taught to do in an architecture firm. I'm like, there's better ways to do this and to have more fun with it. I'd rather be in a shop figuring how it's fabricated than sitting behind a computer all day. So,
yeah. I think that's something that, you know, for all the flack we can give GCs, something that they have become excellent at is networking and delegating. And their whole business model, most GCs, is everything gets delegated, right? Mm-hmm. And everything gets, you know, managed through that delegation of, okay, this person's taking care of the structure. All right, that's taken care of. The project engineer that's, you know, is going to be managing them. We've got the other contractor do this. Architects used to be that, you know, and it was, you had three guys that could do kitchens. You had four guys that did this and you had a relationship with them. Architects are great at networking. And I think that though, in a lot of ways, the way that the construction industry has gone is we've let that be taken away from us of, oh, we just have to kind of fit in this corner of you know, codes and compliance and egress and BIM. And no, like you guys can drive, and I think use that internally of like, okay, I've got the guy who trains people. I've got the guy who handles our BIM, our VDC. I've got the team, and investing in your people as well as your external resources, like you said, to be able to delegate these things. And that's when an architect, I think, is at their best, is they have the big picture and they're managing and delegating resources towards that big picture. And that's where I feel like my goal as a business owner now is to be the architect of my business's future of, okay, I need to be finding people for the key roles, sales, estimating, operations, and developing them to be leaders of that function and executing my vision for the business. I think that's the same thing an architect on a project is ideally. And I think you, when architects translate that well to their business, I mean, a lot of them do it, but I think more of them could take what they're good at, which is that big picture thinking, and reflect inward on how they're structuring their business.
Yeah. I feel like they are too structured to try to stay in their lane when it's like, I love being a business owner, and I can see it from the architect's standpoint on all these different entities. And some architects aren't good at seeing that. And yeah. Also some architects don't want to project manage through the whole project. But then I look at those architects, I'm like, well, you could just go be a draftsperson. Because if you don't want to do that people management and different entities, then that makes the view of an architect even more narrow to you only do drawings. And it's more they're trying to hold on to something that's not working for their career rather than shifting. So for you, I would grab all the architects that just want to draft. Yeah, that's a great marketing tactic to grab people. And then they get a rubber duck.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I know you also volunteer with the Architectural Woodwork Institute, AWI, for anybody. So how does working with that organization and volunteering helped your expertise and grow your business?
Yeah, absolutely. So AWI is, you know, basically the largest, I'd say, trade organization for our customer base in the U.S. There's a couple others. There's AWMAC in Canada, and there's Wood Institute. But it's really been an opportunity, first and foremost, to understand our clients' needs and our clients' perspectives. And so they hold two conferences a year, and those alone are just a great opportunity to get face time with our customers and the leaders and owners of the businesses that we work for, understand what are their needs, what are their pain points. Two is to be able to volunteer and kind of help. I'm on a committee for technology task force where we do some presentations and educating them on technology. And so helping them of like, how can I help you help us? And vice versa of like, what are ways that technology is evolving in our industry, software, machinery that can help them see what the future's coming, but also like, hey, how could you kind of modernize to adopt some solutions that get you to the next level? And I think it's really just that relationship building with them of building rapport, getting face time. And that's really what's key for me is understanding who our clients are at a personal level, what are their current pain points, and how can we be adjusting and growing to where we're actually helping them attack what their biggest pain points are. And I think understanding their perspective of, you know, it's very easy as a business owner to be very self-centered and like, well, how do I get more business? How do I get more money? How do I get more of what I want to sell? And the key to that is really understanding what your client's needs are and how can I solve a problem? How do I add more value? The money will come. The work will come. And I think if two is awareness, is people need to know you exist and know what problem you're solving and know that what problem for them you're helping them solve. It's not that, hey, we're great at what we do. Duckworks is the best at drawings. You should hire us because we're going to do great drawings for you. No. You partner with Duckworks, we're going to help you make your project successful. We're going to help you be the hero of your own story. We're just a guide that's coming a long way to help you towards your goals. Our goal is to help you meet your goals. And so I think it's really being kind of having that fly in the wall of like, this is what our customers, they're there to meet with other people that are owners of the same businesses as each other. And I'm just there as an opportunity to kind of learn what their pain points are and how I can maybe help them solve them. Outside of that, you know, I think they do AWI writes standards for our industry, which now they're an ANSI AWI standard. So it's the standards by which all of our clients manufacture, and being a part of being more knowledgeable at that so that I can kind of help come alongside and educate my customers on that and be a guide towards, hey, look, I know this seems difficult to understand, or maybe you're new to this. I'm going to help you through it and make it very simple and easy as possible. I think similarly, like an architect understands the building codes, your customers have to be compliant with them. But they don't know them. They don't educate themselves on them. And so our job is to be a guide to kind of help them through. Hey, look, I understand it. I'm going to help you get to the result you need from this.
Yeah. So then you're not trying to spin your wheels on it and figure it out, but also trying to take the hat on, not just trying to get the next business project, because it's, you never know where projects are going to come from and future clients. So it's all the relationship side and the long term. And sometimes it's you gain work and sometimes you can help other people. I love being able to refer others to projects that I can't help them on, or a different service that's not even architecture. And it's like, oh, if I know somebody that's really good at their job and they can really help this individual, I love giving referrals out because I'm at least guiding them to somebody I know can help and they don't end up down the bad rabbit holes and dead ends.
Yes, that is something that I think not enough people understand or like appreciate the value of is, one, I always want to be able to help my clients. And if I don't personally have the service to be able to solve their problem, I want to be able to point them in the right direction. And so networking is a big part of that, is one, I'm constantly, you know, steering people that I meet of like, hey, you should talk to this company over here. They have a solution for what you're talking about. And I know them and I'll introduce you to them. One, that adds value, that right there of directing people, just as like, you know, homeowners, our neighbor asks me, hey, do you have an HVAC guy? Yeah, I do. And I've already worked with them and I know that they're trustworthy. And as professionals, that adds value. You should always be growing your network to be able to have a response. It's way more valuable than like, sorry, I can't help you. Thanks anyways. And two, that often comes back because when people learn that about you and they say, hey, Caitlin, I remember you pointed me to this other guy and he was a great help. And the next time they come across somebody, they're going to refer you. And they're going to say, yep, I know Caitlin, she's a great architect. And if you're in those services, I can't solve that for you, but I'm going to point you to Caitlin. You know, it really does come back, and being able to build that network of other professionals that say, hey, look, I trust you. I've built a relationship that I know who you are. You're a good person. And I wouldn't mind doing business with you. Even if you don't have the product that I need, I may know other people who do. Mm-hmm. And so building that network is huge, huge, especially if you're starting out in business or you're in a stage where you're struggling. I've gotten so many leads that I met 2 years ago and it took them 2 years to finally get to the point where they're like, you know what? I really do think we need what Jacob is offering. Let's give him a call.
Yeah. Cause they take time, but it can have great legs. And it's like trying to find that advocate when you're in a big firm who will advocate for you when you're not in the room. That's exactly what referrals are. And it's you're not in the room to advocate for you. So make sure you guide people in the way that they can drive people towards you.
Yeah.
So, but I also wanted to hit that you're also a podcast host for the Verify and Field podcast, which focuses on millwork. So what originally inspired you to start podcasting?
Yeah. So, you know, during my years where I was an individual contributor, I listened to podcasts all day while I was doing drawings and working and stuff. And I felt like I was always listening to things that were like construction or somewhat adjacent, but felt like there's nothing that's just what we do. And I felt like there was this void that I wanted to be able to provide that resource for the young Jacob of, okay, there's other guys that are like me 10 years ago that are getting into this industry and they want to know what other people are doing there. And I remember the first company I worked at didn't have a lot of resources. I didn't have access to, like, I would Google my software and there was nothing. And I would search for videos on YouTube or anything. And I felt like as an architect, I remember there's so many forums, so many resources of like, Revit or AutoCAD or Rhino, the software I was using had so much, and there's tons of people talking heads about it that I was learning. I felt like I had access to it. So I wanted to create that as a resource of like, hey, we have our own thing. And outside of that, you know, I, as we started to grow, I realized like, I just can't get FaceTime with everybody. And that is, was an opportunity for me to start to build rapport with somebody that I didn't get a chance to meet in person. And so a lot of times I knew very early on, like, hey, if I get a meeting in person, or if I get you on a video call like this, I can earn your trust to at least know that I'm competent. I'm somebody you would be willing to do business with if I have the solution for you. But outside of that, if people just go to your website, if people just see, you know, the referral, like, it's harder to bridge that gap. And so the podcast, I felt, was a way for me to kind of, for potential prospects and clients in the industry, to feel like they've had a conversation with me before they did. Mm-hmm. And so it was a easy way that now, you know, people in this industry at least have heard of us. They can quickly go and see a podcast, say, oh, that's who Jacob is. I hear him talk. He knows what he's talking about. And I, you know, the podcast isn't a sales tool for Duckworks, but it's a networking and trade, kind of a trust tool. Mm-hmm. Outside of that, I love this. I love getting to talk to people. And, you know, when I get to have a conversation, I get to hear people like you, your stories. And I feel like that is something that I wanted to have be a bigger part of our industry, is the individual personal level of sharing stories. Because everybody that's in construction or the trades, especially in millwork, has a very unique story. And I feel like as individuals, that's very easy to feel isolated. Like, I'm the only one that kind of is in this position, is in this industry, and I don't know how to connect. And after this, so many people will reach out and be like, hey, look, I listened to your episode about that. I identified with it so much with that person. And I learned from the person that I just asked them questions. I didn't teach anything.
Yeah.
So it's become like just something that I enjoy, getting the opportunity to hear more stories about people in the industry, as well as, yeah, it raises awareness and allows me to build trust with people that otherwise might not feel like they could reach out to me.
Yeah. So how can architects leverage your team? Can we reach out to help on design process? How does that integration work?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, generally, you know, we work through the millworkers themselves. We have done work with directly with architects. I think one is, you know, if you're an architect and you're either designing a millwork for a space, and you feel like, I know that I don't know enough to make this what the millworker should build, but I don't know who to reach out to. I would love to be able to have that conversation, help you through that design process. Because you may not have control over who the GC is going to sub it out to, but we can help you with making it more build friendly from the beginning, or even just navigating that process of, from the millwork manufacturer side, what are they going to be sending you? How can you make it more streamlined? You know, a lot of it is, like you mentioned before, a lot of architects, I feel like, are building their own libraries, building their own families in Revit, and kind of just trying to figure it out as they go. There are resources, there are manufacturers that build families of things. So we've helped, you know, for example, there's companies that make custom paneling solutions, and we've made families for them that are accurate to how it's going to be manufactured, that architects can download and import. So would love to be able to have those conversations to see how we can help you make your models more manufacturing ready from the start, or at least ready for coordination. We've started doing more jobs, especially large scale sporting environments seem to have BIM requirements from the GC, or from, like, especially if there's a government contract for it. So, like, there's a large NFL stadium where we helped the manufacturer of millwork handle the BIM coordination. Really almost none of millwork providers have that skill in-house or have that talent in-house. Mm-hmm. But as it's becoming more required, that's how we've been helping not only do the shop drawings for the manufacturer to build off of, but help with the coordination of the BIM. Because that is a whole new world for most millwork manufacturers is, oh, I've got to put my scope into a BIM model. How do I send that to the architect? And every, you know, project is a little bit different, but that is something that we've been able to help with, is coordinating between the architect and the GC for their centralized BIM model to get the millwork scope in there.
Yeah, because from the manufacturer side, if you've got a BIM model on your website and I can hit download, then it's a lot quicker for me to spec you because it was easier for me to integrate it into the model. But yes. I always find if architects can make a better drawing set, you know, you want the bids as tight as possible. But at least if the millwork has been designed and engineered properly, when you send that out to bid, you're not getting it and saying, well, what do they actually want to do here? This isn't consistent between the specs, or this doesn't even make sense. We'd have to re-engineer that. And if three different subs are re-engineering, you can re-engineer it in different directions, and then the prices all end up out of whack. So if we can make better documents and better details, then you can get better pricing. It can understand everything. And then it would save you guys time on shop drawings. So you wouldn't necessarily have to re-engineer it. So...
And a lot of times it's like minor stuff that trips everything up of, you know, one, like putting fillers and or thinking about like, okay, I need space for the door to open. I need space for hardware to clear each other. Stuff that isn't visible at the stage when the architect's designing it. But when you get into actual field dimensions and coordinating for plumbing, and there's stuff like that, that we would absolutely be able to help with pointers up front to, hey, you might want to think about this, and this is going to make it go smoother when the manufacturer is giving you their shop drawings for approval.
Yeah, exactly. And I always like wrapping up my podcast with this final question, and it's, what advice do you have for young professionals just starting their career?
I would say it's find ways to add value, and you will never be without work. And so a lot of times that might look, you know, I think when you're starting out in your career and you're getting in, you're trying to prove you're competent and obviously learn and kind of show like, hey, I know something. But a lot of times there's ways outside of like, hey, I might not understand building codes fully yet, or I might be tasked with contract documents. I'm still trying to get comfortable with this part of Revit or whatever the, you know, my company system is. But just finding ways to add value and solve problems for your supervisor, your manager, goes a long way. And if you're that person that is easy to work with, you communicate well, and you make everybody around you's life easier, like there's always going to be a place for you. And that is just what I've always done is, you know, as finding ways to figure out, can I streamline a process? Can I simplify something? Or can I take something off somebody else's plate in the department that's going to make everybody's life easier? And if you're a person that people trust as a safe set of hands, that they know, hey, if I give this to Caitlin, I know that if she doesn't understand it, she's going to ask questions and figure out a solution. That goes a long, lot further than being the person that just knows everything.
Yeah, definitely. And I can definitely attest to that with a variety of architecture firm sizes that I've been in. Yeah. But even starting my own, it's, you know, I got to go find the answer and nobody's going to do it for me. So yes. You got to shift. Now, if anybody wants to get a hold of you or best way to reach out to you, where can they find you?
Yeah. I'm active on LinkedIn. You can find me just Jacob Edman. Also, if you search Duckworks, DuckWorks, our website is duckworksmw.com, MW as in millwork. And, on there, you can book a call with me. You can contact me directly. You can see our podcast, some of our blog posts, and a little bit more about what we do at Duckworks. Follow us on all the socials. We have TikTok and Instagram and everything. And our team does a lot of great content that shares a little bit more about what we do, and would love to have you be a part of that.
Awesome. And I'll put all the show notes below, plus my episode on your podcast. So yes. If you do need a quick link over to the podcast, definitely check it out. You have some great guests over there. Yes. So
awesome.
Thank you, Jacob, so much for taking the time to speak with me today.
Yeah. Thank you for having me on, Caitlin. And I appreciate everything you're doing.
I hope you enjoyed our discussion today. Learn some advice to take with you and see how our industry is all tied together to create the world around us. Check out the description below for any links or resources we discussed. If you liked the episode, please do me a favor and hit the subscribe button. Give me a thumbs up and leave a comment below. It really helps others be able to discover this resource and support finding that career path that best works for them. If you know someone that has inspired your own career that you'd like me to interview, let me know in the comments below, or you can reach out to me via my website or LinkedIn. I'd be happy to share their story or your own. Thank you again, and I cannot wait for the next career story I get to share with you next week.